Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 404.
404, file not found. Like a web page error.
I know, and in 10 more, we'll be in the 414. That's official area code here.
That's the special one. I'm not waiting for 920.
Or 715.
715.
Up in northern Wisconsin.
262, we passed a while ago.
Yeah, so, was it Luda? Is that who I'm thinking of? Yeah. He knows what the 414, I think is how he said it more so. He's got podcasts in different area codes. We'll go with that. Mm. Welcome, everyone. Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, joined alongside Johnny V here for, well, another night of podcast.
Yeah. Another night.
We are post. I mean, obviously, the big conversation taking place this last week in terms of tournament play, Skyline Classic. We are post the Skyline Classic, so that's what we'll be recapping today. I don't know if there was anything else. Of course, the OTB on the Elite Series took place. We'll recap, talk a little bit about that. And somewhere, I believe, I'll read you some information and some details and updates. Last week, we had Sarah Nicholson on the show talking about the women's team event that she put together. And I believe I have a few details and results and updates from there. Heck, I'm just going to give that to you right away because she did send it to me. So thank you, Sarah. She said that Ace Run got some sweet frickin' coverage, I think was the exact quote there. We'll go with that. So look for that on Ace Run Productions, good friends of the show, for the Throw Pink Women's Team Championship driven by Innova. And Johnny, you'd never guess the name. The Tennessee Tornadoes took it down.
The Tennessee Tornadoes.
Yes. And that included Donna Barr, almost called her Bear, Donna Barr, Amy Cantor, Cher Kitchings, and Amber Meese. So congratulations. Of course, it looked and sounded like a really good time. I can only assume that it was. Showing 30 teams listed here, and the information can be found. In fact, I'm going to try and link it for you guys. 30 teams listed for the Throw Pink Women's Team Championship driven by Innova. So congratulations to all the competitors. I was just telling Johnny just before we got started, sounded like a really fun event when Sarah talked about it last week, and it seems like it would be a great thing to pick up in your local area or region or whatever and see if you could run with something of that nature. We've, of course, gained so many women's events and women's only tournaments in the last few years, but this one had such a unique perspective on it, so it's pretty cool to see.
A couple people are noting the difference in light quality. And so for those of you, we'll give you a quick behind the scenes tour. We're probably a little washed out right now. I've got these key lights down, maybe a little, they're down pretty far, but the webcam, we moved from a high quality 8 to 10 year old JVC that was smashed because it had been dropped by my wife and myself at one point when we were filming a wedding. And we went to, I went to Best Buy today and I bought like a, just a 4K quality camera. And actually, I think the quality of the picture looks okay. It's just that we're a little bit blown out as far as the white balance goes.
So. Yeah, Johnny working on a little of those.
I'll mess around with it. I'll try to dial it in a
We need
bit.
All the help we can get. I don't know if you know
I don't
this.
Need to be as...
We
as,
need to hire another crew to come in and fix
As Daniel how we says, look. We don't need to be any whiter than we are.
Yes, we're about as... yes, as vanilla as they get. So hopefully we're going to see some improved picture quality. It says, you're too clear. I like a little blurry. Well, I wonder how blurry you guys were at the event this weekend. Anyway, we're not going to go there, Sarah. So that was for what we just said with Sarah in that event. I want to touch on, I'm going to bring up, in fact, a few details from it. I'd like to touch a little bit on this weekend. I had the pleasure, along with an entire team and slew of other people, to host the 2022 Skyline Classic presented by Discraft. And some people did make note, I was told later, that they're like, wait, you just put this event on the schedule a few weeks ago. How in the world did you have custom stamped discs that were available? And that is solely due to our friends over at Discraft. So thank you so much to Bob and the rest of the crew at Discraft. So I want to quickly recap a few details for you. If you're going to wait for the final round interview, or I'm sorry, the final round coverage to come out, then close your ears just for 10 seconds. I don't know. I'm going to try and get it up much quicker this year. But Taking It Down is the brother of fellow media personality of Brian Earhart. Instead, it was his brother, Thomas Earhart, took it down. Very impressive play this weekend by Thomas. It was much closer during the first round than he decided to take care of business and take it away during the second round. Averaged somewhere around 10-20, 10-22 golf, something in that neighborhood. And then there was a huge tie for second, so I'll read them all off. Sean Butler, Zach Finwall, William Rockcastle, and Scotty Too Hotty Burtard, all tying for second, five strokes behind what the effort was from Thomas Earhart. So congratulations. Thank you guys so much for coming out and playing. Serena Giles was one of only two women that competed in FPO, so she took it down. And then Zach Kobus took down Masters, with Michael Holton destroying everyone in advanced. So pretty impressive. I'll read some more champions from Sunday. Maddie Haley, Jason Barnier, and John Dorn all taking it down on Sunday's play. And if I can find it quickly, I'd like to give you guys, I'll give you guys Saturday's action. What can I say? I'm a little biased here. Let me see if I can find it, though. Sorry, one sec. Jacob Klug took down intermediate. Melanie Sanfilippo went uncontested in intermediate women. Angel Ortiz took down rec. Katie Missyian won in rec women. Max Jacobs in novice, and Caitlin Borgwart took down novice women. So thank you to everyone that came out. And I have to quickly say, Nick and Juliana Schick, Ryan Pilcher, Tom, Big Daddy Jenkins, Tom McManus, the Pastry Dye Boys, all of those people, Sean Butler, Ryan Pilcher, I think I just said, Dustin Skorpinski, all of those guys are really who made the event happen. So thank you, in conjunction with all the sponsors and Discraft. So lots of fun.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Saturday's weather, intermittent rain throughout the day. Not exactly lovely and beautiful and pleasant. Everybody fought through it very well.
Which is funny.
Sunday was gorgeous.
Here we didn't have any rain up here.
I know, and it was only about 45 minutes. That's about an hour from where we are to where the tournament took place, an hour south, closer to the Illinois border. And when it was all said and done, we had rain on Saturday, but not Sunday. So thank you to everyone that was part of it this weekend. Really appreciate it. All right. So apparently there was a larger scale tournament than the Skyline Classic this weekend, Johnny. And I think, excuse me, you had front row seat to it, kind of, sort of.
Well, I mean, front row seat. I didn't have to pay for a spectator ticket, but I got to see all the cameras.
Okay, okay.
So that's nice. Yeah, correct. The OTB Open, we saw a new course on the Disc Golf Pro Tour at a familiar park, we saw Stockton play last year, but the course was redesigned. Only, I think, maybe three or four existing holes from last year, maybe five. I don't know. I don't pay attention to that stuff. But ultimately, this came down to it was on a ball golf course, but it wasn't played like a ball golf course. It had a lot of low ceiling shots. Leonard Muse redesigned it. He designed it last year as well. It was a bomber's course. There's no way around it. You were advantaged by being able to throw far, and more so, I think, than some of the other courses on tour, maybe short of LVC. But ultimately, it played all right. I think if we're talking about the course for a few minutes, I think that the course lacked a little personality. And that could just be that it's the first year. It was different than last year. So this is a lot of times we're seeing the first things. It just felt like you watch these players throw and then you knew they were just going to have to throw hard again. I'm going to reserve complete judgment until we see this course again and again. Maybe it'll grow on me a little bit. There are some great holes out there. I think it's 9, 10, 11 is really good. I like hole one, the starting hole. Hole 18 is a pretty solid hole. 17's good. It's just there's a few spots in there that the holes just meld together. You could drop somebody there, a lot like LVC, I think, and then you just wouldn't know where on the course you were, which, you know, that's whatever. But it sounded like the players enjoyed it. It played well for them, and we got for the FPO, we got a returning champion in Paige Pierce. Paige comes out. She won last year's OTB Open. She shoots 11 under par for the event. Final round, went in with a 9-stroke lead and threw out 16 holes, gave it away. Gave that lead away. Natalie Ryan came out guns a-blazing. She had 3 birdies to start out with, then took a par and another birdie. And according to her post-round interview, she said that was the point after the first 3 birdies that she felt she had a chance to catch Paige, which says a lot considering you're going up against probably the greatest woman of all time. And Natalie got on a roll, 11 through 15, 5 in a row to catch Paige. They both parred 16. Paige basically didn't get a birdie from after hole 4. She took 2 bogeys. And then, unfortunately, Natalie came up on hole 17. And that is 17 and 18 are 2 of the defining holes on this course.
So I have to ask again, I come from a very weird position in that I had no idea what happened throughout the weekend, largely because I was running a tournament with 231 people of our own. And so I didn't get a chance to consume. I have a real hard time getting into, as much as I make post-production video, I sometimes have a hard time getting into it, especially when I'm caught up.
Of course.
But my question would be, and I know you're also a different perspective because you're pressing buttons and you're not 100% in tune with the actual play and the intricate details. But what in the world is the huge difference between a course record setting 10 under by Paige on Saturday, round 2, versus an even par on Sunday? Is there anything off the top of your head that seemed obvious or apparent to you?
She didn't hit a circle 2 putt.
Okay.
And granted, she barely hit one all weekend, I think. She just wasn't getting, as they say, she wasn't getting to the green. She couldn't quite get them close. She was either putting herself in like a slightly awkward position to get there, or she just wasn't quite on her game. And I don't know if that is a result of going into that round with a 9-stroke lead, that maybe she took her foot off the gas, even though the day before she said she... Somehow words come back to bite you. She said she's going to play that round like the final round at Worlds. And she did, unfortunately. But it ended a little bit differently. So Paige said she was going to come out and still kind of put that accelerator on, but she just couldn't. Whether she was truly trying or not, I don't know. but she just could not get the birdies. That's and it makes sense on a course like this that can be very difficult. These are long birdies, and there's a reason why when you look at the top players, three of the four of them are probably some of our furthest throwing women in Paige, Natalie, and Ella. You know, Juliana just kind of, she had a great final round and played very conservative and smart. Didn't take a lot of OB strokes, none in the final round.
Hmm.
And that is how she kind of kept herself up there. You know, she, right? Is that right? No, that can't be right. I'm looking at.
She didn't make any C1X putts.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were all.
Because they were all tap-ins.
Inside
yeah.
tap-ins.
I was yeah. like, I was trying to find out what her putting percentage was. It says 0% C1X. And I was like, that can't be. But it honestly, it can. Because if she missed three of them inside the circle, that then became tap-ins. And the other ones were all tap-ins for birdie. So ultimately, she really had, you know, and she only hit one outside of the circle of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 that she had the opportunity. And Juliana is not known as a phenomenal putter these days. You know, she's had her issues, and I think she's kind of working through them still and getting better. But, you know, Juliana just did it by getting close. She pinned. I think she got hole one all 3 days, which is a feat in and of itself, because that is a it's a dog leg right, but it's only probably, like, if you're looking at, you know, I don't know, it's not a straight dog leg. It's probably at like a 45 degree angle, and it's difficult because you have to get under some trees and around them, but she played it to perfection.
Hmm.
So ultimately, Paige Pierce does come out with the victory, because Natalie Ryan, as we said, on hole 17, just it bit her as it can. There's water on that. She got a little bit more aggressive than she needed to. Honestly, Natalie probably should have just played it a little safer on her second throw, and she went out of bounds. She went for the green, and that could be lack of experience. That could be confidence, as she had just, you know, rattled off five straight birdies. You feel like the world's going your way. Why not?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, just keep riding that wave. I mean, she clearly was making a charge and then some.
Of course. So I don't know what the decision making was. I thought that that particular decision, in hindsight, of course, poor decision. She hits that island and puts the pressure on Paige. That looks like a phenomenal decision.
Yeah.
But as we know, that's not how the story played out. And then on hole 18, she went OB on her. She went OB twice on 18. I believe once was on her drive, or I don't remember if it was her second shot, and then when she approached the green as well. But at that point, Paige basically had it locked up, so that was more trying to push than anything else. Not that Paige could not have gone OB on 18 as well and maybe given one or two back, but it just didn't feel like the momentum was in Natalie's favor at that point.
Wow. So I feel like this, because of the charge that Natalie had, you know, the conversation around Paige and not being feeling like she was fully prepared, the length of the course. There's so many different storylines that came out of this weekend, ranging from maybe even everything I just said. And then you throw in there some meme creation done on the MPO side.
We'll get to that.
People talking about what they feel is or isn't an appropriate looking or traveling or accepted trophy. I mean, there's just a lot of conversations. One of them that I felt wildly has then gone under talked about is JK's finish, Juliana Korver, third place, beating so many of the top players in the world. She's clearly put herself there with she's in a rating area where you see her being competitive in that 948, 950 range, you know, which is right there with so many of the other players, but we haven't seen her with these top podium finishes. And I think back to a year ago, it was at this event exactly a year ago at the OTB Open, which felt like her really big return and her coming out party of like, hey, I'm getting back on the tour. I remember walking along with that card specifically, and I really enjoyed it. And now again, maybe just because there are so many storylines, it feels like that has been somewhat of a quiet, line as well. But anyway, I think it's phenomenal. Hats off to her, solid performance. And you could say that of course of all of our competitors, but this feels like this has definitely got to be the best performance that we've seen from JK. And I'll see if I can back that up with any actual stats.
Fairly certain. And it was really funny because today the disc golf pro tour put out I think it was Instagram and Twitter and Facebook post, more or less talking about the MP40 women who finished well, Jen Allen, Owen Scoggins, and Juliana Korver. And
sure.
And Juliana's like, yeah, and one of them qualifies for MP50, which is her. So, because because she qualifies for MP50. Mm-hmm. So
you guys can do that math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, JK this sounds so offensive, at her age, still competing with everybody else. Is she the Johnny McRae of the FPO field?
I mean, and let me kind of, I don't want to say eat my words. Let me back up a little. She has performed and won a number of events this year, but on the biggest stage, and she's been absent from it due to her significant other and all those other reasons. So I'm not second guessing any of that. I mean, she racked up literally four consecutive wins in four consecutive tournaments where she played in B tiers in the California area or in the California region. However, at the largest stage that we've seen her on in the last year or two, this is her best performance in open on this big of a stage. That's what I'm trying to spit out. And it's very impressive. I mean, last year she won the Memorial in Pro Masters Women's. She won the US WDGC in Pro Masters Women's. Those are all phenomenal accomplishments, but this is the best that we've seen her finish at an elite series.
And Sean Mercy says that this was JK's biggest payout ever, and it's not even close.
Yeah, and it's third place. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yeah, from the five-time world champion.
So it says something about where she's come from and then where we're going, most certainly. So, yes.
Real quick, we'll talk about some of the other women in the field. We already talked about Paige, Natalie, and then Juliana. Fourth place was Ella Hansen. Tied with fourth was Alexis Mondejano, who we got to see play with her sister, Valerie Mondejano. And unfortunately, Valerie did not finish out the tournament very well. Alexis, for a long time, we were in the control room. We were a little upset at hole nine that she birdied because she had the clean scorecard going. She'd gone 8 for 8 for pars, and then she wrecked it with her birdie.
Well, at least it's the good
wrecking.
But
it's the good wrecking, correct. Sixth place, Missy Gannon continues to shoot well. Seventh place, in one of those MP40s, Owen Scoggins continues.
MP40s, yeah.
Or FP40, sorry. Yes, another FP40. Owen Scoggins continues to shoot well. Jen Allen as well, tied for seventh. In ninth place, Katrina Allen, tied with Holland Handley. So those are your top 10 FPO competitors at the OTB Open. And all around a very solid event. A lot of fun, good competition, new course, all that other fun stuff.
Yeah, and over on the MPO side, obviously quite the story in having Simon Lizotte come out and take care of business the way he did. And I'm going to bust him out a little. It just sounds like he's out on the West. We know he's out in the
he's in Colorado, I believe, this weekend.
Either Colorado today. or Lake Tahoe, I think, a couple days working on some stuff,
sure.
I believe, with Jomez. But it was even just a few days ago. He hadn't booked his ticket when I was visiting him last week. He hadn't yet booked his ticket. And now, granted, him and I had then a travel conversation about typically, yes, tickets go up as it gets closer, but sometimes with the craziness of travel these days, sometimes a ticket will go down at the last minute. But he had been watching them for a long time, and he hadn't yet booked his ticket. Mm. And there was the slightest sliver of thought in my head where I was like, is he going to maybe just decide not to go? Like, just for whatever reason, house, family, kid, blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe he's just going to ultimately. Clearly, that was not on his agenda, and he ultimately got his ticket booked. I feel like he had relatively short warm-up time in terms of practice, but it didn't appear to matter.
No, it didn't. As we said, this is a, and more so for the men, this is a bomber's course. You can tell by your top finishers. Simon Lazat, while he might, he used to be known as like the far throwing guy, there are a lot of guys now that are keeping up with him, and Simon, I think, has dialed it back just a little bit, but he can still put those discs very far away from him. And Simon had a few really awesome putts. I can think of three of them off the top of my head that were some of those kind of maybe give it a chance to go in, because you don't want to go OB past the basket, and all three of them went in for him. So, you know, when things are going your way, they're going your way. And he had like a 100-some-odd-foot throw-in for Eagle.
On day one, right?
On day one that, you know, as he said, it was a bad throw that got the basket got in the way because he was trying to lay it up. He knew if he missed it, he said he'd be outside the circle. So anyway, so Simon Lazat takes first place, 20 under par for the event, shooting an 8 under that final round. As well, shooting an 8 under that final round, Kelvin Heimberg, another this course of all courses, I think, suits Kelvin very well, because there are a lot of low, hard distance throws, which I believe is like his specialty. He's the kind of guy, he's not the one that's out there like Simon. When Simon throws a bomb, it's usually a big flex shot, or at least that's what we've seen in the past. Kelvin has a very direct, hard throw straight where he's aiming, and this course really set up well for him. Third place, the guy that last year made a name for himself out here, Aaron Gossage, nephew, I think, or great nephew of Goose Gossage, a former MLB pitcher, and you could, you know, that clearly runs in the family with the way you can see him throw those forehands, because mm-hmm. Gossage can crush them. He shot an 8 under as well. Anthony Barella comes out with a 4 under par in fourth place on that final round, 15 under for the event. And we saw Anthony, unfortunately, roll his ankle, I believe it was on the third hole, on a jump putt. And Jen Allen was there throughout the round, kind of taking care of it. They put some kinesiology tape on it, some KT tape or whatever. They were spraying it with, I think it was nitrogen, to keep the swelling down.
Oh, and I would have just used WD-40.
Well, that's why you're not Jen Allen.
What does she know?
I know, she's only a physical therapist.
Whatever.
So, unfortunately, you could tell that it was inhibiting him. He was throwing forehands because he couldn't put a lot of weight on one of his ankles. Mm. He was throwing forehands in places where it's not the ideal shot. Everyone else is throwing backhands. He would walk up and throw a forehand. I don't think, based on the way Simon was playing, I don't think Anthony would have caught him, but it would have definitely been a closer battle, had Anthony been able to perform at peak performance. You could see his ankle afterwards was, as someone said, about the size of a grapefruit. So hopefully he's okay, and it's like a minor sprain, but shout out to Anthony for kind of willing himself through that. Speaking of willing yourself through something, Ricky Wysocki taking fifth place. What an amazing, amazing performance by Ricky. His knee did not look good. He was limping the entire event, but he was on coverage first round. You could see him really, it was tough for him to walk. I thought after the third hole, I'm like, dude, wrap it up, get out. Just don't hurt yourself. You don't want to, you know, with an injury like that where you can't put a lot of weight on your knee, you don't want to mess up another ankle or knee because your weight shift is wrong and you're trying to compensate. So all I kept thinking is like, maybe this is just go get it taken care of. But Ricky, no, Ricky doesn't think that way. Ricky thinks, I'm playing pretty well, so I'm going to take fifth.
Yeah, which is incredible. Yeah, as you were saying. Did you feel like other parts of his game were apparently suffering or not? Like when you look at his putting or anything like that?
Early on, yeah.
Yeah.
Early on, you could see, I mean, he missed, I think, a 12-footer. He airballed it.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was a little awkward.
Wasn't it on this very podcast?
his putting was, I think, a little off, especially the first round and maybe even the second a little bit, because he even said he had to change up his entire putting style because he couldn't push off and he couldn't put weight on it. So I think he suffered a little bit there, but ultimately was able to finish up strong, shooting at 8 under par that final round. The same as Simon, the same as Kelvin, the same as Gossage is honestly, it's one of those games or one of those rounds that people will look back on in the future and go, wow, like that was relatively nice. I think I read today he's having his knee drained.
Oh, okay. That sounds gross.
Really? So, yes. Okay. So he's having his knee drained today, and he's hoping that he's got 2 weeks to recover before Portland. So hopefully that we wish you nothing but the best, Ricky. Fifth place, Chandler Fry, shooting a 7-under par. And Chandler Fry, I believe, was maybe, is that the only gentleman who did not have an OB stroke?
Yes, on the weekend. That's what I think we ultimately heard.
So he shot a 7-under final round, getting up, passing up a bunch of players to get to 14th. He jumped up six spots. Seventh place, Drew Gibson, giving us the highlight of the weekend. Doing his best Nico impression of pretending to kick a basket. But unfortunately, as we all know, Nico a little more graceful than Drew Gibson. Drew Gibson fell on his ass.
Yeah.
And a meme was born.
So dare I... okay.
Ask away, Terry.
Well, no, I was only going to say, again, and this comes out of legitimate ignorance, he was not on the lead card when it happened. Was he on a chase card?
I believe he was on the chase card.
Okay.
And so this is really funny. Behind the scenes control room action here, little tech talk. We are watching at that exact moment, we're watching Matty O throw over one of the water shots. Not quite make it. And Matty O is on the ground doing a Matty O thing. One of the things that we tell our cameramen, after Matty O throws, don't leave him. He's going to give you something. He's going to give you a first down. He's going to give you some
kind
sort
of reaction.
Reaction animated. That's what Matty O does. And so we actually go back and replay to watch Matty O's reaction. And we're talking to Gary, who's doing replay. And Gary's like, no, I've got something that's better. And none of us had seen it other than Gary in replay. Even Mo, who usually watches all the cameras, somehow missed it. And we're like, what's better than that Matty O reaction? We play it. I watch it live like everybody else because Gary O just puts it in the thing. And all I see is Drew lining up for a putt. And I'm like, all right, what did you hit and roll like 50 feet? It was like 2 minutes of the control room laughing, belly laughing, like to the point where we're all like, okay, we need to comb that. We replayed it. We played it in slow motion. The only thing we didn't do was play it backwards, which I think would have been great.
Sure.
And you know, poor Drew, I mean, shot well, but guess what? When you do something like that, you're asking for it.
And the fact that he's okay. If there's some kind of serious injury or something as a result of it, totally different story, of course. But the fact that he was perfectly fine, other than a little bit of a bruised ego, then it is appropriate enough to laugh about it. It's not like he, you know, fell off a bridge and, you know, broke his ankle or anything silly like that.
He popped right up. And like I said, and a meme was born. Very funny. If you haven't seen it, there's a great meme out there of him doing that and then suddenly flying through space. And it's well worth your time.
And without disappointment, you can also, and I've said this for a few years now, follow Silas Schultz on Instagram. Ooh, because he also has put together a pretty good version of it as well. Silas pretty good with some of his impressions.
Silas is classic.
Yes, he does some pretty good work out there. So make sure you go out and you find his version of it as well.
Okay, I will do that right after the show. Eighth place, Joel Freeman, continuing to have his very solid season. He's always appears to be like 5 to 10, you know, so congratulations, Joel, having a really good season, almost a little under the radar because he's not quite hitting that top five, but he's never really falling out of the top 10, it feels like. So,
So
Joel Freeman, a very, very good season so far. Ninth place, a tie with Austin Hanum and Gannon Burr. You know, Austin... this course just seemed to work for him for whatever reason. You know, he's not known as he's a pretty decent, he's got decent distance, but not elite distance like some of these guys. But Austin also does have, he's and a lot of these guys, he's very proficient forehand and backhand.
Yeah.
And I think that helped him out quite a bit. And I think he probably had a good putting weekend, which is what it also takes. So congratulations to Austin, who shot, you know, very well. He actually had a slightly below average, I'll say, final round where he only shot a 3 under, when a lot of the other guys, when you're kind of shooting for a 5 to 6, is really where everyone really wanted to end up. But still was able to, he fell 3 spots in the final round, but still a top 10 finish. And as we know, Gannon Burr, he's the highlight of the season. He's the story of the season. He's 17 now, the 17-year-old kid coming out and still playing lights out golf.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, after the performance he has at a Masters Cup, then you come back and still finish top 10. Mm-hmm. You know, has he raised his own expectations to a level of like, oh man, I had an off weekend, when obviously so many people like Simon and others have said a top 10 performance is doing solid work out there. However, you have to wonder where his new expectations have landed these days.
It's unfortunate, and I don't know if anyone did this. Ask him at the beginning of the season, what were your expectations for this season? You know, did you go in hoping to take a couple top 20s?
Sure.
And versus your expectation now, is your expectation top 10 or bust?
Exactly.
At this point,
as his floor raised, so to speak. Yeah.
Or did he come into the season going, no, I got this, I can take top 10 every week?
Sure.
I don't know what his preseason thought mentality was. So
either way, pretty impressive. And then because he's obviously one of the best in the world, seemed like a less than stellar performance out of Paul McBeth this weekend. As I'm just finding him, I scrolling down to a tie for 19th.
There was quite the talk about whether he was going to take top 20. I don't believe he's ever gone 2 in a row without being in top 20 or something like that. There's some silly stat there, but he was able to squeeze into the top 20. I don't know what his thing is. I don't know what his problem was this weekend. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see him much.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up, and I am truly naive to all of this, as I'm just pulling up some of the stats for the weekend and seeing 8 OBs, which I'm sure he'd tell you is, I mean, well, that's clearly 8 more than Chandler, but 8 OB strokes, gain putting 4.51 strokes. That was 15th. That was his best stat. Or strokes gained, yeah, C1X 3.69. So it just looks like he was not killing it in any given category. Obviously, 68 was the opening round, and then followed up by a 61 and a 62. Again, you're not necessarily concerning yourself about who else is in 19th, because that might be a career high finish for someone finishing that position. But when you're talking about one of the top rated players in the world, and to see a little bit on the struggle bus for the last couple of weekends,
I've said this before, and I hope this puts a small chip on his shoulder. Paul McBeth is not an elite distance player. And I think that's what this course required.
Okay.
Paul McBeth has phenomenal form. He is a good distance thrower. He is not elite. He does not, these guys are out driving him by 20, 30, and 40 feet now. And that could be one of the reasons he couldn't quote unquote keep up.
Hmm.
Maybe it's not. Maybe he looks at it a different way. That could be true. But, you know, he just doesn't have, he doesn't have Calvin power. He doesn't have Simon power. He doesn't have, I don't know if, I don't know, I don't think he has Gannon Burr power.
Okay. I mean,
McBeth plays a different game. He plays more of a touch game than a lot of these guys. And I don't think that's what necessarily favored this course. And if it's true, and I didn't see a lot of him on camera, he has been withholding that forehand for a while because of an injury. I don't know if he did this weekend, but if that's the case, there were a few shots that just, it was a better shot to throw a forehand, and I don't know if maybe that's part of it as well. We'll see.
I don't know. Dustin, who, you know, recaps things and talks on Disc Golf Network and does some work with Gatekeeper, is disagreeing with you on the board, Johnny. Do we want to just ban him now? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to ban him. he says he has 550. Sure, he has 550 in a wide open field. No doubt. When was the last time you saw Paul McBeth throw 550? In a low ceiling power throw. It's just not his style. You know, that's not what Paul does.
He, because you're comparing it to what we see out of a Kelvin,
yep,
or an Eagle or a Simon or someone else that's correct, able to do that.
It's able to throw a low ceiling power shot, like a real, you know, a very, very strong, fast throw. And that's just not Paul's game. And it's I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think that these guys that are getting him by, again, 20, 30, 50 feet, that adds up.
Okay.
And you know, it won't hurt on most holes, but there are some holes that you're going to be in a better position if you can do that.
Yeah, and I stated this earlier. I had the pleasure of being on the league night, on Disc Golf Network earlier tonight, my first time ever being there. Thank you to those guys. I was there with Matt and Jamie. And one thing I do recall is doing the math. And this weekend's 11,727 feet averaged out to 651.5 feet. And I'll say it here again. Think about going out to your course tomorrow, whether it's league, whether it's for fun, and you step onto your course wherever you play and think about 18 holes in a row that are 651 feet. Some people just like kind of grimace thinking about how their arm would hurt,
yeah,
and how unpleasant or maybe not fun that would be for you. That's a lot of throwing and a lot of golf and a lot of distance to cover. That's for sure. I think that's incredible. I remember getting ready for the 2011 Worlds. And at the time, the average hole length, I think I added up all the courses there, the average hole length was like 432 feet or 468 feet, something in that neighborhood. And I remember thinking whatever the average hole length was longer than what I could typically throw myself, and being relatively discouraged, I'll admit that. And now thinking about this Elite Series event on this one particular course with an average hole length of 651 feet, pretty crazy. All right. Speaking of this weekend, it was clearly a last moment thing. You may have even seen it unfold in the chat in the last few minutes. If we can work it out, we may even have one of the tournament directors from this weekend in Sean Mercy, often referred to as one of the Sean's, because Sean Jack and Sean Mercy take on the tournament directing for this event, along with a number of other things. So it sounds like if we can get him all fired up, we might be welcoming him to the show. And in other similar news, we unfortunately heard just before the show, not only did we have this terrible shooting that took place in Texas earlier today, which I was just made aware of myself. I didn't have the news on. So, of course, thinking about everyone, just unfathomable to think about somebody in a elementary school, and which is terrible. Johnny and I both have young kids, and it's just terrible effing everywhere, if you really just want to put it that way. Also, catching wind just before the show started that it sounds as if Simon's uncle has passed away. His uncle, who lives in Canada,
Peter.
And so, understandably,
to the Lizotte family, you know, Peter is apparently and I don't know Peter very well. I have heard the name. He is a groundbreaker up in Canada. Mm-hmm. So he is very influential up there. So,
yeah, certainly tragic day. Also heartbreaking anytime we're losing friends of our disc golf family and our Frisbee family, especially such a legend of the game. But so, hugs, thoughts, love, big hugs, as we always used to say here at Smashbox. And it seems as if we might be ready to go. I think he can hear me, if I can get a nod. It sounds like he can hear me. That means he probably will have his audio working. Coming in on no notice, from our Disc Baron Digital Green Room, one of the Sean Mercy. Welcome, buddy.
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great.
I'm doing good. Still catching up on some rest. But.
I was just going to say, how are you like at all awake or upright? Talk to us about, first of all, who's crazy enough? This is a legitimate question for so many people. Who and why are people crazy enough to try and put on an Elite Series event? Like, where's that drive come from to even host one?
It's a really good question, especially looking back on it right now. Feeling appropriately worn out for what we put into this event. Honestly, like for me, I think it's once I agree to do something, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do my best to make sure it's the best that it can be. Working with Sean Jack, I think we both have a very similar set of standards for what we think, you know, an event should be. And of course, like it's taken a few years, I think, to build up to where we're, what we were able to achieve this year. But, you know, I think we kind of hitched on to it in 2018, and we're really at this point just seeing it through.
So many people have talked, and maybe I'm, that's why I have a little FOMO and a little frustration that I wasn't involved this year. So many people have talked, including Paige Pierce, our champion, about a new era and about the aura, the ambiance, the experience, about being out there at this event, at this park, and what you guys put together. So what's either changed or what are we missing that everybody is raving about so much? And don't be humble or shy about it. Tell us, why is it so great?
I mean, I think it's a lot of what I just said, but at the same time, really, I feel like this year things all just synced up for us really well. Having the property at Swenson really unlocked, I think, the potential for an incredible spectator experience. We were able to surface it last year, but not really tap into it. We only had 40% of the area, and really couldn't plan for spectators, or just didn't seem to make sense because we weren't sure if we were going to be able to have spectators until like 3 weeks before the event, I think. And then we really just did the best that we could given those circumstances. But actually, one of the major reasons we redesigned the course was for the spectator experience, and not just for this year, but for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. And I think I saw that vision this weekend realized, although at a smaller scale than what we expect to see going forward.
Yeah, you could really see the open areas for spectators and a few places that were unique for spectators that I didn't expect to see. Normally, you see the spectators kind of hanging out around the players or around the green. You'd see somebody throw and their disc would land halfway or three quarters up the fairway. And then there was a set of stands. And I was like, what the? Oh, that's a great place to be sitting because you get probably a couple different holes in that area. And I was very impressed with the number of spectators that we saw out there, the quality of spectators, and just the locations of the spectators.
Yeah, the Disc Golf Pro Tour actually was on site, or part of their operations team made it to Swenson. It'll be 2 Wednesdays ago tomorrow, or 2 weeks ago tomorrow. So it was a few days before our amateur event, which was the weekend before the Pro Tour event. And they were able to start setting up the assets actually prior to the amateur event. So we had the truss up on 14. We had a bunch of the feather banners and walls and stuff up prior to our amateur event, which I think gave them a head start, obviously, on setting up the entire course. And I also think they have a bigger and more capable team this year. Mm-hmm. And so getting the head start plus the extra people, we were thinking about crowd control on Monday and had ropes out and basically done by the end of day Tuesday. I mean, we kept adding, but the majority of it was done by like Tuesday evening. And I think we did a really good job of providing great access for general admission while also differentiating between that access and what the VIP passes were able to get. And I don't know if, did you guys catch the elevated platform on hole 6, 5, 6?
I don't know if I remember seeing that.
It was basically like a little stage. So we had like a concession area to the right of, if you're the player, to the right of the tee pad on 6.
Okay.
We call that Party Peninsula or Party Island.
Oh, yes. Yes. Our drone showed it a few times. Yeah. It looked phenomenal.
Yeah. So we had a bunch of people over there with tables and canopies, food and beverage. And then on the left side of the player's tee pad was a platform so that VIP spectators could see over this mound that would basically be blocking view if you were standing in that location otherwise. So that was one of the things that we added on the course this year. We added a few sets of bleachers on hole 18, which we did not have last year. We had bleachers on one. And yeah, I think just all told, I think we were able to really not only like set up the infrastructure to have a good spectator experience and provide great viewing, but also just the planning and knowing how to move people around the property like during the rounds. I think that all that together really led to what people were able to gain access to.
Yeah, I do feel like this is, from what we've seen so far, one of the best spectator experiences on the tour. And it, you know, I'm trying to think of other events that have come close, and I can't think of any. It looked like this one was set up as well as we've ever seen.
That's what I'm hearing. I honestly haven't been to a ton of other big events. Been to GMC many times and Worlds in 2018. But otherwise, most of the big Elite Series events have been either SFO or now OTB Open.
Now,
yeah, that's the feedback we received, including from Jeff Jacquois, which was really a pretty big compliment.
Yeah, for sure, because he's not only running one of the biggest events, but also now is on site for so many of them. Yeah. So clearly has great perspective. So, as you said, a very worthy compliment. What is, maybe explain to everyone, what is the relationship? How does it come about with Swenson, and what does that mean planning-wise, you know, cost, reservation-wise, you know, some of those things that maybe aren't obvious or apparent to anyone that's not in those intricate planning stages.
Right. So we basically rent the golf course property from Swenson LLC, which is owned by Kemper Sports, which is a big golf management company, I guess. Mm. But we negotiate directly with Swenson. Joe Smith is the GM. And that connection was made by Craig Gustafson, or Crash, and the Delta Windjammers in 2020, actually, late 2020. Since then, though, we've been working directly with him. This year, we are going to end up paying $20,000, which is a pretty good deal for about 150 acres, is my understanding of how much property there is there. And then in terms of like, you know, planning the event and building the course, so on and so forth, it's both Sean, Jack, and I, you know, basically communicating with Joe Smith. And then for the course build, Joe actually just put me in touch with his superintendent. His name's Caesar. And so for anything property related, if we wanted to but they're actually amazing to work with. They understand where we're at and sort of scaling this event. They were, you know, very impressed with what we did last year. And Joe actually kind of pushed us to take over the entire property this year, which, you know, kind of unlocked the potential to do the redesign that we did and set up for kind of scaling for the next 3 to 5 years. But yeah, it's I expect the cost to definitely go up for next year. He's pretty transparent with us in terms of what his revenue numbers are and what they need to be, because he has to report up to corporate, essentially. And the way that he frames it is he wants to make sure that there's not too big of a gap, because he doesn't want to answer a bunch of questions. And then once corporate gets more involved, maybe it becomes more complicated. So,
well, and that was going to be, it always seems like our perfect crossroad is finding a golf course that isn't entirely run down where it's, you know, too much work, but also one that's not incredibly busy so that it costs too much to go rent it from them for a weekend or a week or a few different weeks. And finding like that perfect mix and intersection can be tough to do. And so, I mean, in some ways you almost wish like, hey, I wish, you know, your golf numbers would fall a little bit, because you might be easier to negotiate with.
It's true.
And it feels like, but is that, so I guess two parts to this question is, if somebody went out there today or tomorrow or next week, they're not seeing disc golf in any capacity, are they? Like there's,
Well, not on the course that we used.
Okay.
But there's a permanent 18-hole disc golf course that's located on basically concurrent with the 9-hole executive golf course. So there's actually three total golf courses, I guess, on the property. There's an 18-hole golf course, there's a 9-hole executive, and then there's an 18 disc golf course on that same side of the property. So you may see some disc golf there, but otherwise we were out there yesterday and today breaking down. Golfers started to trickle back in, and it was pretty incredible. Even yesterday evening at 5 p.m., pretty much everything was off the course, which I was pleasantly surprised about. It felt kind of surreal, you know, looking around and as like the sun gets low, that it's so beautiful out there and it was just so peaceful. And compared to like, you know, after Simon dropped in his final putt on Sunday to that moment yesterday, it was just, I don't know, it was pretty nuts.
And so I guess then maybe that answers the question, though. The golf and their operation there is doing just fine. Is that a good way to put it, or are they struggling in any way?
No, I mean, honestly, we were out there probably 7 weekends leading up to the event, putting the tee box foundations in. So Saturday and Sunday, and except for Mother's Day and days that they had other events going on, they had full tee sheets. So they were very busy. We actually had to coordinate and plan like when we were going to be working on certain tee boxes for safety, because he wasn't going to turn golfers away while we were trying to put those foundations in.
Yeah, finding those places to coexist and the times to do it, and just a whole nother set of challenges that largely is not realized by our disc golf community. And, you know, way back in the day, I've run, you know, temporary courses on ball golf courses. I think I've done it at 3 different places, and there's all the struggles. And that was at a tiny, tiny fraction of what you guys were putting on. So I know of the challenges that are presented when you're doing that kind of thing. Now, you know, you mentioned a 3 to 5 year plan. You guys foresee yourself with this event and this venue for the foreseeable future. Is that a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement.
Okay.
I mean, definitely next year, but you know, the future is very hard to predict. and we're not signing any contracts, at least with the venue.
Okay. Okay.
But well, it's hard to imagine right now coming out of this past weekend and imagining that we would be moving anywhere in the near term. Meaning the next, you know, at least 3 years, let's say.
Yeah, and this isn't, you know, I'm not out to air dirty laundry or dig up dirt or anything of that nature, but maybe explain why you guys did make a transition from what we saw over at the other...
Glen Eagles,
right? Glen DeVere, those are all on the tour, but Glen Eagles had disc golf. We were there for... you know, at least one iteration of the pro tour, and you know,
two years.
Yeah. I was there for one. It happened too. What prompted that change and how did that come about?
So in September of 2020, Sean and I started talking about, the 2021 event, and, you know, given the state of or where we're at in the Bay Area and in general with COVID, we thought that we needed a plan B, in case, you know, the city wasn't allowing events again, because we were planning to do it at Glen Eagles in 2020. We had a contract, we were ready to go. And then COVID hit. And so we canceled that. The owner of that course was very understanding of the situation. Thankfully we weren't, invested in it, meaning we didn't pay him any money, for that canceled event. It was hard to imagine that we would be leaving that property because the course is amazing. The two events that we had there in 2018 and 2019 were amazing. But we did start talking about it. We thought about pretty much any course in Northern California, you know, within driving distance, essentially, of where we live in the Bay Area. And, you know, there wasn't any clear, obvious alternative. We actually thought quite a bit about a course up in Willits, California, Mendocino County, called Brook Trails. They've held quite a few disc golf tournaments up there, but there's no cell coverage. And we knew that would be a major, major issue. So we were kind of, you know, kind of had a plan B. Maybe we could make Brook Trails work. Maybe we could make one of the courses up in Tahoe work. And then around that time, I'd say early October, Sean Jack was talking to Danny Corbett from OTB and Craig Gustafson, actually. And next thing we knew, we were he was like sitting down for lunch with I think the GM of the golf course, Ed Swenson. And they started talking about what it would look like and what it would cost and all of these things. And then we also, I think at that same lunch, Visit Stockton, which is basically the tourism bureau for Stockton, said that they would be interested in supporting the event and, you know, financially and helping run the gate, for example. And so Sean called me on the way back from Stockton. I think it was the next day, and said, hey, you know, I think we need to talk about possibly moving the event to Stockton. And I think we had talked about it very briefly in September when we were thinking about other venues, but didn't think too seriously about it. Just because, I mean, neither of us knew the property that well, but our perception was that it wasn't super interesting from a disc golf course design perspective. But at that point, you know, we started thinking about it pretty hard, and I'm not sure when, but it happened pretty quickly. Within a couple weeks, actually, we had come to an agreement to move the event.
Now, which I think about how all of these interesting advancements kind of develop, and sometimes the right place at the right time, sometimes it's money, sometimes it's location, everything at one time or another has to all come together. What do you say to someone that says, we're going to another ball golf course, we're going to wide open areas, you know, it's not hilly enough, it doesn't have the right terrain, you know, whatever a number or a slew of the things that get said? What's your response to someone that says something like that?
I think that's a fair criticism of some disc golf courses on golf courses. And it really depends on the property, obviously, to an extent, but really I think primarily on the approach of the design for the course, but really it's the event, right? Like, we're doing events, and the tournament is obviously core and central to it, the competition. So the course needs to be very challenging and interesting to players. But I think, you know, I would just ask that people really take a look at our caddy book. You know, if you want to see a disc golf course on a golf course that, if you didn't know the golf fairways were there, you wouldn't know there was a golf course there. Like, we literally bisected three golf fairways on hole five alone.
That's the
I don't think there was a single hole that we used the golf fairway as our fairway. Hole one a little bit, but we're shooting diagonally across it and then going into the bushes, you know? So I think, you know, when you have someone like Leonard Muse with Whirlwind Disc Sports as your head designer and listening to you and what you're looking for, not only again from a course perspective, but from an event, I think a really good course that not only serves the competition very well, the players like, but also allows us to do what we did this past weekend with the spectators.
And just curious, maybe you can or can't share, approximately how many spectators did we have this weekend?
I would share. Honestly, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think if I had to take a guess on Sunday, our maximum all in, including players and caddies, probably approached 1,000. Awesome. We sold quite a few tickets. I don't have those numbers, but I think, you know, if we had 1,000 on Friday, 800 of those, maybe 750 were paying to spectate. And then on Sunday, maybe 20% less, and Friday, maybe 30% less than that.
Yeah, and yeah, clearly in talking to Sean Jack throughout the years, you know, he, to me, has always been that voice that has wanted to push us forward in so many other professional ways in which we're seeing and drawing parallels to other sports, other venues, other experiences that can be had. And I don't want to say that's obviously not just the salesman in him, but he clearly has just a bigger scope and a bigger picture that disc golf, you know, has been trying to model or is trying to find. And I think he's helping lead that direction, lead us down that path in that direction. What was it like having, obviously Kevin Jones was there doing his set and then having the music on site? It seems like that's such a, I don't want to say a corner piece, but that clearly is a significant part of what so many people feel like was special about this weekend.
Yeah. It was actually ended up being great. I think it was a bit of a smaller turnout than the Pro Tour was hoping, but also they anticipated given, you know, how late the announcement was made and the ability to communicate through to the community. But you know, I know Paige Pierce had a really good time out there and some of the other players. We also had a guts demonstration going on at the same time for the first like hour, I would say. So I was hanging out over there on the other side of the course, but eventually made it over and saw the last few songs of the band, and they were fantastic. I think, you know, this is really what the sport is looking to do at the highest level. It's not just a disc golf competition. It's an event, and it's, you know, providing entertainment, not only in the form of a disc golf competition, but games on the side. We had like a little 3-hole spectator course that people could play. And at night, at least one of the nights, we have music. And I think this has been really Jeff Spring's vision, that part of it. Sean Jack obviously drives a lot of what our vision has been and what we have brought to the table. But as far as the music goes, you know, I think I would say Jeff was the big driver behind getting that going. And we've all seen his vision realized at GMC for the past like 7, 8, 9 years at this point. And I think what's neat about bringing the music on site for the, on the same grounds as the tournament is that people can literally finish watching the golf and then walk, you know, 200 yards and start watching music.
Yeah, and pulling it all together, and Jeff, as he's helping getting it all executed and realizing that vision and having it, even prior to him seeing, you know, ultimately Steve Dodge and the whole vision of sure. Everything that was, you know, part of a disc golf Pro Tour event, you know, as a lot of people or some very people true. Know. There were games that got literally hauled around the country, maybe not so efficiently, but there were games that were hauled around the country that were set up at all the Disc Golf Pro Tour events and, you know, concessions and all that stuff was all part of this Frisbee festival that really made up. And, you know, there were a lot of challenges with it and some inefficiencies at first, but we're slowly and surely getting to that ultimate vision. Somewhere I've got a PowerPoint that Steve Dodge sent me of the original, you know, Disc Golf Pro Tour and what it was all to encompass. And I feel like it's getting closer and closer to that every single weekend. And it's incredible.
Yeah, it is absolutely incredible. And absolutely agree also that Steve he laid out the vision. And, you know, I think it took longer than he was hoping, obviously. At this point, yeah, I agree. We're really just kind of following what people, I think, conceptualized many years ago. And finally now, like, I think we have the pieces in place to actually do what we did last weekend.
So I know you're very active within the San Francisco community, California, and everywhere else. How do you follow up, you know, the all the highs that come with running an event of this scale and this magnitude, running it so successfully? Is it all about planning for the next year? Are you thinking about the next B tier you're helping with? Like, where does it go from here, you know, for what's on your plate?
Well, I think for at least the next few weeks, I'll be taking a little bit of a breather. I am also the president of the San Francisco Disc Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been neglecting my duties for a couple months now. we do have a general meeting that I need to make sure is planned for like late June, but otherwise I'm going to, you know, kind of pull back a little bit, from what's been going on the last 3 months. I've put in, it's been pretty nuts, actually. I don't know if you guys heard about how much work those tee pads were, but we started in early March.
Yeah, I think they even had a small asset piece about the creation of them that we played at one point during the broadcast. It looked like a lot of work, and the tee pads looked phenomenal.
Yeah, I think they turned out the way we were hoping. But yeah, we decided in late February really to at least look into installing a foundation instead of just laying the turf on top of the grass or the ground like we did last year. And we considered it because those tees last year were quite a bit of work to get them to be acceptable, in my opinion. The players didn't complain too much. But I think we also got a bit of, you know, leeway because it is a temporary course, right? We're only setting it up for a couple weekends and then tearing it all down. But we did do a lot of work, a lot of shovel work and rake work, and the tees were still just okay. And given, you know, the level of event this is, I believe that we can't have anything that's just okay. Everything needs to be at least good, and we want everything to be, you know, as close to perfect as possible. And so we decided late February we were going to install 32 foundations. And so we basically built frames out of pressure-treated wood, 6 by 13 for the men and 6 by 11 for the women. And we sunk them in the ground, like, with the grade. So whatever the terrain was around there, we basically matched it so that, the golf course mowers could go over them. Yep. And we would not have to pull them back out. And so we're actually able to leave 31 of those foundations in, which we probably wouldn't have done it if we couldn't do that, because the amount of, time, material, that it would take to get foundations that you have to pull out at the end just wouldn't have made sense. So again, going back to like our relationship with the golf course and the superintendent, the guy who has to maintain the entire golf course, being open to the idea and then, you know, talking it through with me out there on the course, me making clear that I understood what his concerns were. And then we did a few of them. We showed him, and he's like, all right, that looks good. I can deal with this. And so we went on. But all told, it was like 1,300 person hours over the course of like seven weeks. Most of it was on the weekends. I basically spent all my weekends in Stockton from the beginning of March until the tournament, and then the last 2 weekends for the tournaments. And we had like 30-something people come out at least once. And I think we probably had 8 to 10 really core contributors who gave us, you know, 50 plus hours each, and like 6 gave us like well over 100 hours. The Thumpters from Stockton and John Olivia were absolutely huge. We wouldn't have been able to do it without the support that we got locally. But yeah, it was a big project. Just really happy that we were able to finish in time.
So that's all fine and dandy, but let's trash you about your trophy.
Oh shit!
I mean, yeah. I say that tongue in cheek. I mean, and maybe the timing is just there. Like, we talk about the thousands of man hours and the work that goes into the event, the insane effort, the dedication. You know, the hour and a half drive alone in good traffic. You know, for you to get from one city to another to put in weekend after weekend. How does it? Are you surprised, and does it make your skin crawl or frustrate you or not when then somebody immediately wants to say, yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm not happy with the trophy that someone else won? I mean, does that bother you?
Well, thankfully I haven't been online that much over the last couple of days. But I have heard, at least heard the reflection of it. And we did anticipate a little bit of pushback. It was, honestly, we needed trophies. We were behind on a lot of stuff, and it was not made a priority, to be honest. I was able to, we had an amateur event the weekend before. It's an A tier with, 210 competitors and 13 divisions, I think. So I needed trophies for that event. And I was able to work out a deal with DiscDying.com to do the trophies for us. And we included the pros because, I mean, why not? It's only six more trophies, and on top of 38. And so that's how we ended up with those trophies. The amateurs were thrilled, by the way.
Of course.
They're perfect course. Amateur trophies. And
also,
I was just going to say, quite honestly, we all know most of our pros, it's been said also, most of our pros don't really care, and they end up they give it away to a caddy, or they just complain that they have no way to ship it and they can't fit in their van, and they don't know if it'll ever get back home or not.
Your trophy either has to be phenomenal,
like mind-blowing.
Like mind-blowing, so that a player goes, oh, this is something I want to display. Or, and let's look at it this way. There's about eight players that qualifies for, that looks at like, oh, I would keep this. Every other player, I guarantee you, Simon takes that disc and loves it. He hasn't won an NT at Elite Series in a few years. I bet you he takes that and puts it right on a wall somewhere. I don't know. Like, it just, I don't think,
honestly, and Simon did show it on his vlog today. Mm-hmm. He was holding it up very proudly.
Exactly.
Paige, not so much. And we completely understand both, sure. And I think it's a fair criticism, at least, we do need to do better there. We need something to at least present, to be part of that whole ceremony at the end of the tournament. We're probably only going to do first place going forward. Just because second and third, most of the touring players don't care. They didn't win. And the payout was good. So if they don't get a trophy, I think they'll be totally fine. But we will do better with the trophy next year. I think we'll probably end up with something that stays on site. Mm-hmm. If it's an actual trophy. Otherwise, it may be something very unique that most players would want to take with them. Because it is pretty disheartening to spend a fair amount of time and money on a good trophy and then see the player just not care.
Yeah,
I've literally seen the venue and not care whether they ever see it again.
Mm-hmm. Literally seen players throw away trophies.
Yeah.
Throw them in the garbage. Yep.
I saw a very disgruntled FPO player years ago take a very nice looking trophy and literally dropped it in a garbage can. I might have been the only person that saw it. I saw it happen. I was just like, oh my gosh. And that was one of the better trophies too. That's but heartless. They were displeased with their effort and just and was finished. This is one less thing I want to put in my van or my trailer or my camper or my car. And that was the end of it. So it's anyway, this is kind of that classic, I think there's a meme around there where, where a teacher writes, 20 equations on the board. There's one little thing wrong and every student just points out the one thing that's wrong, not the other 20 things that are correct. And that feels like one of these scenarios. You guys nailed it on so many levels with so many accolades, and then something that doesn't impact the viewers at all is a trophy. And then, but that becomes a conversation piece. So,
I think the critics are just looking for their end, everybody's I guarantee you that anybody that was on site didn't care what the trophy looked like.
Exactly.
Any of the spectators that were actually there, they would not point that out. I don't think, but
whatever. Get it. All you
we
do
have
is
thick
you,
skin.
You get a really nice trophy next year, and you put whoever won this year on it as first, or whatever, or you go back a few years and you add everybody onto it, this is the OTB trophy or the MVP trophy or whatever your sponsor is or whatever you want to call it, the Stockton trophy, and then you just make sure look, we added you because you were the whatever. It just and you give them a knickknack to take home, something small, and I think that
they could throw like a frisbee.
Something they could throw like a frisbee.
So quick follow up to all this. We saw the incredible news a few months ago, in fact, with MVP stepping up in a major way along with Steve Dodge over at obviously the MVP Open and at Maple Hill, a long term commitment. Can you share where you guys are? Was this a 1 or a 2 year deal, or is there a longer contract in place, or is that all up for negotiation right now?
So we had a 1 year deal, but we actually had a debrief with MVP this morning, as well as Danny Corbett with OTB, and we haven't really talked terms yet, but we did both indicate that we would like to do a multi-year deal with MVP. So we're going to, you know, continue discussing that and see what makes sense. But we're absolutely thrilled with how it worked out with them this year. You know, when we signed the agreement in January, we knew that the options for discs was going to be pretty constrained because their production schedule had already been set. A lot of it had already been allocated. You know, we couldn't get like exclusive plastic mold combinations, things like that. It had to be already in the queue. So that really limited us for this year, but we knew it. Danny was okay with that. So we moved forward, and, you know, we talked today about some pretty exciting stuff for next year. I think that we'll really start to unlock the potential in terms of merchandise next year. But the support all around from leading up to the event, getting our discs like in the queue, stamped, shipped, was phenomenal. And then MVP sent 5 guys to the tournaments before the amateur event to support us and to do some retail for them. And they were absolutely phenomenal. They helped us build up the course before AMs and then pros. They did their assets, you know, of course, out on the track as well. But they were basically just part of the event team. Great attitudes, very capable guys. And, you know, I see good things in the future with them.
Awesome. It's great to hear. And I think that also speaks volumes in that, you know, as recently as a year or so ago or 2 years ago, I know Sean Jack may have even been sponsored by a competitor in Innova, and just knowing that you guys for the best and the greatest good of the event are willing to set aside, you know, some of those personal relationships and whatever to put on the best show for the, you know, ultimately the players in the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And so I think that says a lot overall. And clearly, it's getting more and more competitive as I feel like our sponsors are clearly trying to get the most bang for their buck. But events are also asking more and more of the sponsors, you know, event to event as well. So a very competitive space to be in. And you got to wonder who now has the upper hand. It used to be, you know, so interesting to kind of almost beg some turn, you know, some event manufacturers to sponsor an event, and you were happy to if you got a discount on some discs and maybe a few things for free. And now the conversations are so much more intense at such a larger scale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty pleased with our position. I can say that. I think MVP is really happy with how things went this year, and really want to figure out how to scale it up going forward. So yeah, I think it is a different paradigm for events at the highest level. If you're able to execute and deliver value to your partner, be good to work with, you know, that you can be in a good position with a manufacturer like this.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that you guys, again, dropped the ball on is I didn't see a cheesy commercial with you guys along with Steve over at MVP. That's the only thing that was missing is a cheesy announcement commercial. Cheesy's maybe even a little strong. It was anything with Steve Dodge, you know, you're going to get some humor mixed in there. Awesome to hear. And you know, big shout out to MVP for stepping up in the way that they have. And then as we start to close it out here, you and Sean, you know, affectionately referred to as the Seans, you guys actually have a a management tournament directing company, right? Explain to the world, you know, why you would do that and what that exactly means. And should others be following suit?
Yeah, I mean, so after the 2018 SFO, which I was the assistant TD for, I took on quite a bit of the responsibilities for that event. And, you know, after probably a couple months after the event, Sean and I talked and I'm like, hey, I was like, I want to be a partner in this and I want to take on, you know, some of the financial liability. In 2018, he ran it as a sole proprietor. But I also want to invest, you know, in a business that, that does this sort of thing. And I think as events scale, it makes more and more sense, with the amount of money involved, and the amount of liability that's involved to set up something like an LLC, which is what we did in late 2019 or early 2020. And so, sorry, late 2018 or 2019. So starting with the 2019 SFO, we ran everything through our company, Thousand Rated Productions. And that's basically our financial vehicle or business entity, if you will, that we run the entire event through. And I, okay. Yeah, like I said, I do think it's something that, that other event producers or tournament directors should consider doing. It definitely makes a lot of things easier. Personal tax liability, having some kind of separation between your own personal finances and the finances for the event. We were up, I think our total revenue was, you know, a couple $100,000 this year. And you know, most of that went back out. So, you know, if it goes the other way and things fall apart, you do probably want something in between, but also just it is also a formalized partnership between him and I. I'm very grateful that he was interested in doing that. And I'm very happy that we are in business together.
Yeah. And I think that there's a underlying message for everyone. Anytime you're doing any form of business, always set yourself up, whether it's an S corp or a C corp or an LLC or whatever mm-hmm. makes the most sense for you and who you're involved with, always to do that, just to have that extra layer of protection in case, you know, anything catastrophic or terrible would ever happen. You know, you're not getting your kids' college fund taken away,
right?
Because of some crazy lawsuit or whatever the case might be. There's just a good idea for everyone to do, and go out and get a umbrella insurance policy or something on top of that, even if you have to. Unfortunately, yep. Those are all the things we have to do these days.
We do, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it has been
for all of those. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's been incredible. Is there any takeaways or final notes, shout outs, whatever it might be, or just any clearing up any other misconceptions or other notes that you want to throw out there for the world? Totally open platform to do so.
Well, I appreciate that. I definitely don't have anything prepared, but I would like to thank everybody who participated in the event this year. The Disc Golf Pro Tour, MVP, Purpley, our core team, which is Andy Rothschild, Corey Morrell, Jeff Faze, Ben Fox, Sean Pearson, James Teets, Matt Neiman, and a new to the team this year is our brand new volunteer coordinator, John Janone. And then I'd like to thank some of the core people who helped us build the course. Excuse me while I pull that up really quick.
Let's get them all in there. OTB as well, I'm sure.
Only the best discs. Danny and his team are absolutely amazing to work with. We're very fortunate. You know, we knew those guys actually before all of this. It's a little weird getting into business with your friends, but it's been phenomenal. I mean, they're super supportive. They handle a lot of the stuff like merchandising that we used to handle. So that's taken a load off us. Very, very thankful and looking forward to continuing to work with them. Swenson Golf Course. The entire staff there was absolutely fantastic. And I am going to be opening the spreadsheet right now. So I logged all of our hours on the course build out. There's many more names, and I do apologize for anybody I miss. But I would really like to throw a special shout out to Greg Derlew, who is also on our core team and is local to Stockton. Sean Freeman, Stephen Davis, John Olivia, Teresa May Funk, George Kimmerling, Alexander O'Hara, Joe Schulz, Sue Perales, Chris Bates, and Carlos Perales. Without those guys and gals, we would not have been able to do the event that we did this year. So I'm super grateful and humbled for all of the time that they donated and for all of the volunteers that supported the event, both for the amateurs and the pros.
Awesome. Again, I rarely am I not at events, and clearly it sounds like this one I'm going to have to fight for next year to make sure I'm involved, whether it's
better, Terry.
whether it's out on the ground doing the sideline reporting or I'm in the booth, either or, it seems like I need to certainly get back. And I'm clearly not surprised by the energy and the effort, the excitement, and just the overall results that I did see and hear from the event. None of that surprises me. It sounds like everyone had a phenomenal time and great golf was provided and solid payouts, just everything. 1,000 rated, I think they would say, or above.
Maybe certainly. Maybe we need to rename it 1050 rated.
Yeah.
We made that joke a few years ago about some companies that were like, or websites like 1,000 rated back when that was, you know, a bigger deal. Now it feels like if you want to go big, you got to go 1100.
Yeah.
I mean,
planning for the future.
That's right.
Now, thank you guys so much for the opportunity to talk tonight.
No, we really appreciate it. You know, you guys are out there killing it, and that gives us so much to view, to watch, to, you know, for everyone to enjoy. And we get to sit back and largely, you know,
critique.
Well, yeah, but we get to take it all in and benefit from the work that you guys put forth. And we just can't say thank you enough. So hats off to you guys, hats off to the, you know, the pro tour and the network, and of course our champions and all the competitors. Like you said, super glad to share a little bit more insight behind the scenes and some more of the background in the story. So thanks so much for tuning in and for jumping on. We had no plans of having you, and you were in the chat, and we just make it happen. So thank you for being helpful and flexible in that way as well.
No, thank you guys for everything. And please, thank you for all of your work. Like, without you guys, we wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't have had the live streaming, you know, the way that we have it these days. You guys have donated so much of your time to the sport. Thank you so much.
Well, we appreciate
it. Thank you. We appreciate
it. All right, everyone. That is Sean Mercy, your TD, co-TD, assistant, part team, superstar, all of that of 1,000 rated from the OTB Open presented by MVP. Thanks for joining us, and looking forward to the next time I see you, buddy.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Have a good night. And I know this is going to sound crazy, everyone, but he literally was in the chat. He made a comment.
I saw that.
From there, I said, hey, get on the show. And that's how it rolled. So thank you. Absolutely. Unlike his event, no prep work here. We just went right into it. So
that's how we roll at Smashbox. Yeah. That's not how they roll.
They prep, we benefit. That's how that goes. So so glad to have Sean join us. Thank you to everyone else that has been following along, asking questions, chiming in. Most of you are positive, except for the one typical DB that's out there. Anyway, so we've covered all the results, all the details from the event. We talked about a few of the storylines. I think we've got all of that locked down and taken care of. Johnny, why don't you head over to the PDGA, find out if there's anything else. Usually we see some announcements about some approved discs or any other major projects or initiatives. I've got one for you as soon as you break down the PDGA. What do you got?
Well, I'm looking at the announcements page, and right now they've got the 2022 PDGA World Championships registration dates out there. So you can go out there and for Am Worlds, Masters Worlds, Junior Worlds, and Pro Worlds, you can look. So as of Monday, June 6th, so we're coming up on that in about 2 weeks, 970 and above can register.
Oh,
so you and I
still can't.
No, we can't. But can we? Do you think we can
get exemptions?
No,
they won't. I cashed in a world once or a few times.
I don't know. I wonder if I could pull some strings. I doubt it.
Probably not anymore. Those days are gone.
Those days are gone. But no, I was thinking, like, can we quick run an event that we can try to play? Anyway, hope to play well.
A world's exemption event that then earns your spot.
Correct. So, yeah, that's kind of the PDGA and stuff. As always, you know, there was a couple new discs from other companies that were approved, but you know what? That's whatever. discs. Okay. There's so many and they so many are. Companies, and I just, you know, I feel bad saying this, but unless it's like a one of our bigger known companies, I don't even feel lately like oh hey, here's something from, you know, Monsoon Discs, which I think just released one or something, or maybe it was the Monsoon. I don't know. But anyway, a bunch of discs out there. So please go try all the discs. Honestly, try them all. Buy one of everything. Make everybody happy.
Okay.
Go. PDGA news. We've got, and they talked about it during one of the PDGA interviews on the broadcast, was a call for candidates. There's global board candidacy is due May 31st. So you have 1 week from today to, if you're interested in being on one of the boards, whether I think it's the European board or the PDGA one, you can become a candidate. We had 1 year where there was a bunch of people who registered, and then it's been kind of dwindling since then a little bit.
People realize that ain't so fun looking.
It's
just to get constantly berated, bashed. And
just think. The decisions that you make just get hammered on. Very rarely does someone turn around and say, that was a really good decision.
Yeah.
Instead, we get negativity. But congratulations. If you're interested in becoming a board candidate, please by all means submit. If you think, even if, I mean, just try.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the lottery, right? You're definitely not winning if you don't buy a ticket. Well, you're definitely not getting on a board position if you're not submitting your name. Now, you may or may not win, or you may or may not put in all the effort required, but you're definitely not just getting called up and saying, hey, you know, we're putting you on the board, whether you like it or not. So if you're one of those big talkers online, you think you know everything. You've got all the fixes and all the answers, which I know plenty of you do, then by all means, put your name on the ballot, get yourself a platform statement. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to just say put up or shut up, but and not everybody's cut out to be a board member. That's very obvious. But
we've seen a lot of people who thought they were, who were not.
We definitely have seen plenty of that. And it just feels like it gives you an opportunity to go out and, maybe be part of that. Also, state coordinators. Every year, half of the state coordinators are
up for election.
They are up for election as well. And that could be even maybe at a more regional or local level, you know, could be your in terms of seeing what goes on and some of the efforts that take place. I think I held the state coordinator position for, I don't know if it was 18 or 17, 18, 20 years, whatever. It was a long time. And some of the years were much more difficult than others. But now that we've got as many tournaments as we do, it has become a much more laborious task, and but still impactful. So if that's something that you're into, maybe, become a state coordinator. That would be a good option as well. So, and I know there's a lot of people that talk really big about having all the answers, that think they're super smart.
I'm sitting right here. Dude.
Yep.
It's awkward.
Yeah. Well, then put your name on a ballot and go out and try and become, that person, that go-to, that resource. All right, Johnny, I sent you a link. I don't know if we can. Well, I'm sure we can show it, and I know they won't complain or be frustrated if we do so. Something that's been going around that you may have seen, we're certainly helping make a push for it. And you've seen Bill Nye, the Science Guy, has gotten involved. And that is the disc golf documentary, History in the Making. And Dennis Worsen, who has put together, he many years ago, I'd use Flatball, and we put that together. He put that documentary together. Wow, I'm really having troubles with my words now. He put that together. It was amazing. Talked so much about the history of Ultimate. Well, now for a few years, he's been gathering footage and content to put it together for disc golf. And obviously with COVID and what we've seen happen over the last couple of years, the massive influx of competitors, players, tournaments, all of those things, I think even his documentary has taken a slightly different turn. So it's a out there. It's an Indiegogo fund right now. And I want to say that, yeah, it says right here, there's 3 days left and we are helping support that. Can we go ahead and play the, I would love to play. I think it's 3 minutes and I think it's pretty darn good.
I'm playing the preview so people can see it, but it would be a little bit more difficult for them to, for us to play it so they can hear it as well.
All right. Well, that's too bad. Okay. Well, go out and find it. Hey, actually, I'm going to link to it this very second within the, there we go. Don't go watch it yet. You got to listen to everything Johnny says, but after that, click on that link and go out and if you can support it. Dennis, I think, has won some awards. Very, very talented. In fact, I had a great conversation with him a year ago at the OTB Open. He was out there gaining yet more content for it. Super excited. He's talked to just about everyone you can think of. And this is going way back in the history books and talking to so many of the movers, the shakers, designers, you know, whatever. A lot of the early pioneers of our sport. So I'm really looking forward to this documentary coming out. So let's get out there. Let's support it.
Let's do it.
And it's got Bill Nye, the science guy, who played Ultimate.
He did.
That's pretty cool.
Certainly did.
Wait, I don't think some people like science. I just remembered that.
Science is real. I've got a t-shirt that says so.
I did talk to, in a very lengthy customer service call, I believe her name was Jennifer, and she was Bill Nye was her sixth iteration cousin away or something of that nature. Somehow she was related to him. We had a much longer, weirder conversation. I was trying to get my dishwasher, I think, fixed, but somehow we were talking about Bill Nye.
Somehow you're talking about Bill Nye, the science guy.
Let's just say I've had some weird phone calls in my day.
Your life, Terry. Your life. Don't know.
All right. Do we have anything else within the regular show that needs to get discussed, Johnny? I feel like that was such great insight, too.
It's great insight, Terry. Everything you say is great insight.
No, not from me, from Sean.
From Sean.
Although, I'm going to take a little credit here. I see the things that Sean posts often with regard to tournament directing and a lot of his philosophies. They are eerily similar to what I think a lot. In fact, we've taken our conversation offline.
What?
Or in a sidebar to have conversations. And it's kind of eerie how often we align on a lot of things. So I'm not saying that's a good thing for him, but we find ourselves aligning quite often. I think he's a phenomenal guy.
And it's probably how Sean Jack feels when I call him.
Yes.
like this is going to be something. It could turn into something, but more than likely not. And it's going to be 2 hours.
Yeah. All right. I think we're going to close out the regular show. I think that's been a pretty solid. I don't have anything else for you guys.
No, we got after show stuff to talk about, I'm sure.
Oh, sure, we do. All right, guys, we are going to close it out. I will reiterate, I just saw actually a post a moment ago by the Lizotte family as well. I know it had kind of circled around Reddit and other places, but we love you, Simon. We love the entire family, and sorry to hear of your uncle passing, Uncle Peter passing. But, as he had just said, I think, in that post, something to be said about him seeing the performance that he had just this last weekend. And that's certainly something that he can take with him. So thank you guys for joining us. It's been a little bit of a all over place, but we got it all taken care of tonight. This has been podcast 404 with some various lighting.
we'll try to nail down. I'll try to nail down the lighting some point this week. We'll see. So we're not. The problem is Terry and I are very white, like white.
Yeah. Well, we've got our own problems. Yeah. But then everybody claims that I'm way too red some days.
There are times you are.
For Johnny V and myself, we've got a big thank you again, Sean Mercy, for jumping on unprompted, unannounced, unknown to him. But thank you for joining and giving us the insight about the OTB Open. Thank you again to all of my competitors and the incredible staff and crew that put together this last weekend's Skyline Classic. Thank you guys so much. I couldn't have done it without you. We're going to log off. We're going to take a quick couple-minute break, show you some credits. We'll see you in a few minutes when you step inside the Smashbox for the after show.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.